I'd like to welcome everyone back to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here. Much more importantly, activist and author Diane Brisky is our very special guest. We want you to get this book. It's so important to those who care about our animal friends and the environment in general. Name of the book is Now You See Me, From Endangered to Extinct. Frank McKay with Diane Brisky. Diane, welcome back.
Thank you.
Right before the break, last time, right before we closed out last time, you were talking about a polar bear, and she was received originally from a Mexican circus, and she's rejected three suitors. I guess she's a picky lady in her dating, you know. And
yeah, she's a diva.
She's a diva, right? So she didn't like these three. What do they
no,
do?
No.
How often do they expect her to mate? In,
they can try every year. It's usually in the, from the spring till about end of August, September is their breeding season, and apparently there's been activity because the keepers watch, you know, very closely, and then come November, they should be seeing signs of her planning on denning. Now they have an outside, it looks like a cave, and it's got straw in it, and her mother would go in there and sleep. And then come the end of November, they will bring her in to an inside den where they have cameras, and they will watch her just like they did the giraffe. A 24-hour cam to see when April was going to be born. They can tell the signs. And for the last, I think it is two or three males, was nothing. And like I said, they can breed, and but it, like if she's stressed for some reason, she'll not let that embryo develop. And what they did this last time is, and a lot of people when I worked there said, well, why don't you artificially inseminate her? And they would tell us it's very hard to do that to a polar bear. Now, they do it to the pandas because a panda only has, like, I don't know, 24 hours to conceive. It's a time, you know, where a polar bear is, you know, these things are large. Right. And, and you have to sedate them, and it's really a technical thing. And this was just this past year, and nothing. So either she is barren, or she is just not, she's close to being in her 20s at least. I know she's in her late teens, I don't want to say she's a lost cause, but they won't get rid of her because she was the first polar bear cub born in way over 20 years. So she's a star. So they won't get rid of her. Now, they can bring in another female, or they can bring in a male that was neutered. Now, when I worked there, two male polar bears, Neil and Buzz, they came from another zoo with.
They named it after the astronauts, right? Neil.
Yeah, Buzz and Neil. They're either brothers or half-brothers. I don't know. But the zoo they were at was fixing up their enclosure. So we were kind of babysitting for them. Well, they were had been neutered. And so they were out. They would play with Fellini. You know, and she was young then. And, you know, they would try to, you know, do the little Vodio go with her. And she would just, you know, kind of walk away dragging him with her. But she could swim with them and just be a polar bear. And then when they left, well, she was all by herself. So they can bring in another female, but they have to be very careful with that because the age difference, if they put two females together, they could go after each other. So when Berla, the mother, was there after till Lainey turned 2 years old. Then they separated them because then the mother sees her as a threat.
Wow. Yeah.
But there's a lot of zoos that are very good at, getting new polar bears. I feel sorry for the ones that are in the Arctic, in Alaska, Canada, Norway, because of the situation with the oceans and the encroachment of human beings. Churchill, people go to Churchill every year when the snow is, when the ice is melted, the bears come up to eat. And then when the ice is back, then they can walk across and go back to their homeland. But it's sad to even watch a documentary on these beautiful animals starving, yeah, because they have to swim a long distance to find the seals. And that, if they find a seal or a walrus calf, or even a washed-up whale, that's not necessarily a given for them that, their eating needs are going to be fine. With all the pollutants in the water, the fish swim, they eat the seaweed in that, other fishes that are swimming in that, they've got that in their body. It's a chain. The seals eat the fish. The bears eat the seals, and they're taking in all of that stuff. Hmm. So, and it's all man-made. It's all man-made.
Let me ask you something that you mentioned. You mentioned Churchill, and Churchill is in Canada. It's up by the Arctic Circle, and these polar bear, beautiful polar bear, have become a nuisance, I guess, right? I mean, they're
right.
They're all over this town. It's one place that I would like to go to. I'd like to get there one day. And let me ask you about what do they do with them? I know they have those. They look like big sewers, like big sewer pipes, and they capture them in there. It's a trap. They come in there and they try to eat. They capture them and then they take them, I guess, as far away from Churchill as possible.
Right.
These giant creatures. I mean, by the way, they could be 12 feet tall, polar bear, even more. I mean, they're giants. They're real giants.
And they are
an animal that would hunt down a human being. What is the latest with Churchill? What kind of marks are they getting for their handling of the polar bear issue?
Well, they have a lot of patrols. Now, they have the sightseers, the big dune buggies that are up high because those bears can stand 11 feet tall.
Right.
And their feet are just, they're humongous. So they can stand up and, look in the window of these dune buggies. So the tours go where the bears are, which is sometimes garbage dumps. They're crossing the seas, the sea melts, and they're stuck there till it freezes. People are not allowed to feed them. Kids are taken to school by their parents. They have a curfew. Nobody's out after such and such time. They have signs up warning them that this is a polar bear area. Sometimes they'll be seen in the town. The rangers that work there have, they will shoot up in the air, or they have like a rubber bullet that they will shoot just to tell them, they're going to shoot at me, not hurt me, but I don't like the feel of that. I'll stay away. So they really have them under control. But with all the tourists coming in, it's like you have a treat in your hand. And like I said, not that they're feeding them, but the potential of, maybe somebody's going to throw me a dead seal or fish. I'll check it out, And there are people, researchers, that live right where they are, where polar bears have actually come up to their house, and especially photographers. So they can take pictures of them, but these bears aren't bothering them. There was a thing on the news quite a while ago where this polar bear came up and was playing with the huskies. Now, if that bear was really a menace and hungry, he would have eaten one of those dogs.
Yeah.
But he was playing like he was a dog.
Wow.
You know, I'm not saying that all polar bears are like that.
No.
But you have to, there's pros and cons to it. And, you know, if you're hungry, you're going to do whatever you can to find and eat what you can. And if that means going after a human being, well, you know, I'm sorry, but the human being is stupid for being in an area that's posted polar bears.
Yeah, no doubt.
I don't need a polar bear picture that close.
No, definitely not.
You know, I go to any zoo and take it.
Yeah.
But that's just the stupidity of some people.
Go to see wildlife all over the world. I've seen it all over the world. It's a big habit of mine. I would never shoot an animal, even though I'm not against deer hunting and other kinds
mm-hmm.
of hunting. As long as it's not extinct and as long as it's not, putting any other animal species in jeopardy. I've seen the after effects of starvation of animals, and it is a disgraceful sight. Let me remind folks, Diane Briskey is our very special guest, part of a series with Diane Briskey, the author and activist, and the name of her book is Now You See Me, From Endangered to Extinct. It's a wonderful book. Go ahead, I'm sorry. You gonna say something?
Extinction,
I'm sorry. Wow, okay.
Yeah, that's okay.
I've been blowing it this whole time. But Extinction, and please get this book. Let me go back to Churchill. Churchill is unique, and it's unique because I guess it's one of the few towns that's near
mm-hmm.
the Arctic Circle. Do we know anything about the population of polar bear in that area?
To be honest with you, Frank, I really don't know what the numbers are. I know that there's quite a few sows that come in with cubs. They're lucky to have cubs with the way nature is now. That's something that the rangers do up there. If they the one thing about the Alaskan rangers, a lot of them, and I know that it's happened at our zoo, they have found abandoned grizzly cubs. The mother had been killed. So this was up in Alaska. They had three brothers. So they brought them into their station, and the Alaskan zoo had them. And they put a call out to other zoos, and our zoo got them. Now, we got them when they were cubs, and we have a big bear that used to be for our polar bears. At one time, we had 13 polar bears, but it's a big habitat for them with a pool where they can swim, and they're still there. They grew up together. I had pictures of them swimming and playing with trees. In fact, they actually ruined a beautiful weeping willow tree, sharpening their claws. But to see them grow, they could not put them back in the wild because it's their mother that teaches them how to survive. They wouldn't know how to fish. You know, you could throw a fish in the pond. They wouldn't know how to do it. Now, they throw fish, they're frozen fish. Sometimes they'll throw a live fish in by our polar bears, and our polar bears are pretty picky. They don't eat the heads. They just eat the body because of the fat. But they're well taken care of. And I think if I was to come back as an animal, I'd want to come back and be in one of the good zoos.
Yeah.
You know, and bear my offspring and be taken care of and not have to worry or look around behind me, behind every tree for danger.
Yeah,
no, and that's really what our animals are facing today.
Yeah, I agree with that whole sentiment there. And the lifespan of someone that is, you know, when I say someone, I mean an animal that is in a zoo, in a well-taken care of zoo, it far exceeds one in the wild, I'm sure. And I don't know the exact statistic, but there is not much to worry about once you're in the zoo.
Right. That's right. Their lifespan is longer, and they can get human diseases, just like the humans. So we had a gorilla that had heart disease, and he was taking the same kind of medication as a human does.
Wow.
And he was going to be transferred to the Columbus Zoo because he was breedable. But the lady that he had here, she didn't want anything to do with him, another diva.
Yeah.
our gorilla was, his sister was Coco.
Oh, wow.
The signing.
Yeah.
And they wanted to send him to Columbus. Now, he had been at our zoo for quite a long time. He was way up into his 30s. And he had a cold. And so they did x-rays with him, and he was still taking, you know, the heart medication. And they were just getting ready to crate him the next day, and he passed.
Wow.
And the public, when they found out, grieved. I was a docent there, and when this one woman found out, she actually cried, and I had to put my arms around her. And tell her, I really think he just didn't want to leave us.
Wow.
That, you know,
amazing.
And there, yeah, it is, that people feel that way. They feel the closeness with the animals in the zoo. I used to get there early for my shift, and I used to walk, and I always said, I said hello to my friends, you know, and they would just kind of look up. And it was almost like if you look into the eyes of an animal, you're looking into their soul.
Yeah.
And I believe they do have them. Otherwise, they wouldn't, I don't think they would be on this earth.
I agree with you 100% there. I don't even think there's not a question in my mind. Frank McKay here with Don Zabriskie.
Right.
Got a couple of moments left, and you're bringing up some wonderful points here. Whenever you bring up Columbus Zoo, I always think of Jack Hanna. That's him,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. And,
yeah, Jack Hanna.
Yeah, and wonderful work he did. And you know what? I don't think enough could be said. You mentioned Jeff Corwin, who's an amazing man. I mean, just a wonderful biologist, and the work he does with zoology is just wonderful. But it's these folks that bring wildlife to our front door, our inside our living rooms, never mind our front door, but to our living rooms. How important is that for, and again, you're an educator and you're a proponent of zoos. How important is it to have these folks that really know what they're talking about, talking directly to the living rooms of people, and as far as educating the folks about the wildlife out there?
Well, the one thing that Jeff Corwin had, he had a program years and years ago. He was really young, but he had the humor. He had a sense of humor when he talked about the animals, and he was comical. He was his presence made you want to learn. That's how I learned. So when I would, and Jack Hanna was the same way. Now Jack Hanna on his show, his wife is going out and going to rainforests, and he's seeing animals in their natural habitat. And so when I would do tours at our zoo with the children, I would talk to them about, say, the camels or whatever. And I'd say, well, you know, they'd ask me, do camels spit? And I said, well, yeah, they do. They're ruminants. I said, they've got multiple stomachs. They chew their cud and all of this stuff. And I said, they only spit if they're excited or nervous. And I said, well, one thing you have to do is don't stand close to the camel pen, because if they get nervous and they see you there, if you hear, move, so they know that they'll spit. And I've actually gotten a still picture of their spit coming out. But you have to make it, you have to motivate them. And that's what teachers are doing now, and that's what the zoos are doing now. Plus, that gets the kids interested in the animals, and you get the kids interested in animals, you got future wildlife people.
Wow. Just, you're absolutely right. The work that these folks do, and by the way, we're out of time, but let me remind folks that you've been listening to Diane Briskey. We encourage everyone to binge listen to everything that we've done together. The name of the book is Now You See Me, From Endangered to Extinction. Frank McKay here, proud to be here with a wonderful advocate for animal rights and for the environment's rights, and author and activist, just wonderful in every sense of the way. Just one last thought on Jeff Corwin. I love Jeff Corwin. I love his sense of humor, and more so than Jack Hanna. Hanna's got a great personality, but Jeff Corwin is laugh out loud funny. I just remember on one small note, sometimes he'll set up the camera where he has like a little chameleon that's about 3 or 4 inches, and then he'll run away from it, you know, but it'll make it look like it's a giant dinosaur.
Right, Why did we live next? Why did we live so close to the radioactive?
That's right. He is a funny man. Just a great
guy. Yeah, talent. He is.
Wonderful. Diane Briskey, thank you very much for being here. Thank you very much, Diane.
Oh, you're welcome.
And I want to thank all of you for tuning in. Frank McKay here, urging everyone to get the book, and Now You See Me, From Endangered to Extinction. Frank McKay signing off. Diane Briskey has been our very special guest. We'll see you next time on Breaking It Down.